Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 83. We got Justin from Brooklyn's Beat here today. Kicked around the NBA draft last week with Mark Schindler. Ultimately, think things fell into place largely how we expected them to. Celtics going with a project in J.D. Davison, not a guy who's going to project to impact the team right away. First three picks, Paolo Banchero, his momentum toward number one carried out, and he went there despite the smoke signals from the Magic that they were going to go with Jabari Smith. A little disappointed we don't see Paolo with Houston and Jalen Green. Instead, it's going to be Jabari Smith, who probably works out there, though I don't think he changes the franchise overnight. We're probably going to have to wait another year to potentially see that happen in Houston. Chet to OKC's awkward, I think, just because of the fact that they're not going to have an interior presence, and I think more often than not, he's going to have to defend some fives, which we'll see how that goes. And then Keegan Murray. I mean, no disrespect to him at all. Could be a great prospect. Sometimes great prospects end up in Sacramento and doesn't work because it's Sacramento. And stunningly, the Kings don't go with Jaden Ivey at that spot. I almost fell out of my seat, but people were telling me, get ready for the Kings to be the Kings. And just when you think that they're in a good spot to turn a corner, they do something crazy like that. Maybe it's not crazy, but I think it is. Ivey, the potential there's through the roof. Murray, older, more of a do-it-all guy than someone who's going to significantly change your fortunes. And their core is De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. Lost Tyrese Haliburton in what already looks like a questionable deal. Don't love it. Free agency starts today. Not a ton of rumblings. Guys ending up back where they were in the top end, whether it's Russell Westbrook or James Harden, who's going to restructure his deal in Philly. Big plus for Philly, by the way, not getting stuck in a max with him. That would have been an absolute disaster. Kyrie opts in. That's what we'll be talking about today after a bunch of drama this week that preceded his decision. Justin S., as I said, from Brooklyn's Beat, all over the drama of this team, more than the on-court discussions about what had the potential to be a dynamic three seasons, has been, from the start, derailed by coaching change, roster changes, injuries, the changing whims of stars. It's been unreal what's gone on there in Brooklyn. Still look like they could be somewhat of a formidable team, but I don't know how, after the last 3 years have gone, you can count on everybody figuring it out, getting it together, and focusing on the game. Though perhaps Ben Simmons returning to the court could be a big part in that. I originally liked his fit there. I didn't like how the year ended on the Simmons front, even though it did seem like he was legitimately hurt. DeJounte Murray goes to Atlanta. A bit of a stunning move for both sides there. Hawks mortgaging most of their future when they're sitting around the middle of the league. I see the upside there for the Spurs taking those picks from them, though one is a Hornets pick that projects to turn into 2 second-rounders. 2 are swaps, so the Spurs will have to get better than the Hawks to execute those. And 1 is an outright first from Atlanta. So not as much upside as it looks like on paper. Certainly no players coming back, just Danilo Gallinari's contract. And Murray, a rising star in this league, one of the best passers, a dynamic rebounder for the guard position, one of the best defenders at that position. Legitimately looked like he could be a cornerstone piece of the Spurs. Now, I get why they look at him making medium money right now for just 2 more years and say the brunt of this roster, most of its draft picks over the last couple of years aren't even going to step into significant roles before Murray's eyeing free agency. But could you have gotten more? Could other teams have offered more? Certainly, the Celtics are going to be a team you look at if it doesn't go right at that point guard position this year and say they had a chance to package all their future picks for Murray in a Jrue Holiday-like deal and potentially cement themselves as championship favorites like the Bucks did following a move like that. I don't love them not being involved there if they weren't. That's a guy we looked at last year and said, there's no way you can get him unless you're giving up Jaylen Brown. In the end, the cost ends up being money, which the Celtics had in the form of a TPE, cap relief for the Spurs, more cap relief than Atlanta could offer. In the end, it's an $11 million guarantee for Gallinari, up from $5 million. And picks. Spurs already own a pick from the Derek White deal. That's actually an advantage. You can maybe take the swap rights away there and make it an outright pick in 2028. There are a lot of different ways the Celtics could go to surpass Atlanta's offer, I think. Now, I'll leave the possibility that Murray benefited from playing for Greg Popovich, playing in a large ball-dominant role, and doesn't translate, especially in Atlanta, where he and Trae Young will be sharing playmaking responsibilities. But I think it could have gone sensationally in Boston for him. Elsewhere, TJ Warren, lots of noise around him. If that's the day for the Celtics, I'll be satisfied. Good flyer. Great value at $6 million, I would think, though. You worry a guy like him with his isolation tendencies does end up being the Schroeder $6 million. Not that bad, but a bit of a vacuum at that position. TPE available till July 18th. So a number of different ways they could go there. I think the best bet would be a defensive wing. Not a ton of guard options there. So do you go with a Tyus Jones in free agency and Malik Beasley on the TPE, some combination like that? The Celtics can end up looking like a pretty deep, formidable team if they push the right buttons at those spots. If they punt and it's Gallinari and the MLE and they don't use the TPE, I think you do start to question if by default a couple teams pass the Celtics by, whether it's Milwaukee, Miami, depending on what they do. Certainly look formidable before their injuries. And you have the Nets floating around there, Bulls, if they're healthy and back. There's a number of different teams that could be competing with the Celtics there. If they don't solidify this roster, there's real needs that shone through as the playoffs advance. And again, Chris Middleton's healthy. Ball bounces a few ways in game 6 against Milwaukee. This is a second round exit team compared to a finals team. Not taking that away, not changing history, but does put an onus on improving this roster. And I liked Ime Udoka's approach of comeback better. But I do think that bench is going to need a little bit more padding, especially after a draft where Celtics don't add anything that projects to help them. Not counting on Aaron Nesmith, Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser taking big enough steps to impact the bench all that much. So you need at least one outside addition, I think. You got to spend, you got to maintain that salary more than anything else. You got $17 million here on a TPE that just disappears, going back to Gordon Hayward's $30 million. They didn't recoup enough assets for that, and luckily that money's still on the books in the form of that TPE, but you're going to have to turn it into some salary now. I don't even hate Duncan Robinson at his full $17 million there, just because he'd fill that spot, bring some shooting potentially, and isn't a complete disaster, I think, of a contract. It's not great, but it does keep that full number on the books if you need to make some moves later. And it's just tax. You know, the tax number's staggering, but the Celtics haven't paid in a few years here. No repeater tax till 2026, which is when Robinson's on the last year of that deal. So we'll see. We're, of course, brought to you by Bet Online here at Dome Theory. Go and check out the new betonline.ag. The website's fantastic. Daily odds, lines, props, as well as futures. NBA right now. You can go and get team win futures right now. Lakers over under 46.5. You can go bet that. Regular season props, you got Chet Holmgren's blocks per game, points per game, bunch of rookie props right now coming out of the NBA draft. You have WNBA going on, you can get those games. Believe World Cup this summer? Yeah, 2022, World Cup. Odds there right now on group play. So go check that out. You can get baseball, as always, fun to bet baseball, adjusted lines in there. There's just so much. Hockey now over, unfortunately. Congrats to Colorado on winning their cup. Change of pace from the Lightning. Good to see. They are the favorites to win next year's cup now, Colorado. Unsurprisingly, Bruins plus 1,800. Believe in them being back on their feet with a new coach here. Their odds are among the highest in the NHL. counting off here. Eighth favorite in line to win the Stanley Cup next year. That and more on BetOnline. And if you use the code CLNS50 to sign up, 50% back on your first deposit. You know the deal, CLNS50, drop 100, get 50 to work with for free. And, woo, as I record this, Kevin Durant requesting a trade from Brooklyn. Talk about falling out of your chair. I mentioned in our interview here with Justin S., Brooklyn's beat. It's over for the Nets. Shams Charania reporting, Kevin Durant requesting a trade from the Nets. More on this in our free agency show tonight. Dome Theory, Bobby Manning, Bet Online, where the game starts. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 83. We are here with Justin from Brooklyn's Beat. You know him as Brooklyn's Beat on Twitter. Talking about the Nets, tweeting about the Nets, lamenting the Nets these days, I'd imagine, more often than not. Justin, welcome. Had you on 2019 when this whole thing was coming together. More hopeful time, I think, for Kyrie heading down there and Kevin Durant joining him and a variety of good role pieces at that time. Jared Allen has since left, as well as Caris LeVert, and Steve Nash has become the coach over Kenny Atkinson. We can recount the whole history here, but we're here to talk about the latest step in the saga, which was this whole thing almost coming apart. It seemed like this last week here, Kyrie Irving opting into his deal after threatening to take a mid-level elsewhere, looking for some sign and trade options. I guess I might as well just roll the ball out there. This whole week plus season going back to the playoff run with him, what do you make of it? Just where he's at, where this team is at after he opted into his contract this week.
You know, it's really a mystery because this has been the most unique situation I've ever seen with a free agent, with a player. You know, this team has title ceiling. You know, the potential, the ceiling for this team really is a championship. You know, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, there's a lot of talent there. Ben Simmons is extremely talented. In terms of on-paper fit, Ben Simmons is a fantastic fit next to them. If you were going to say you have Ben Simmons on a roster, who do you want? On paper, they'd be the guys. I mean, they have some bigs. They could use better ones. They're shooting. There's guys like Joe Harris. I know he was hurt last year. But it has just not worked out. And really, Kyrie Irving is at the center of it. You know, he's a great player. Individual talent, it's unbelievable. We know he could do it on the big stage because we saw it in Cleveland. Three finals in a row, hit the huge shot in the 2016 finals. The talent's there. Sometimes it seems like that drive is there too. But then it just has not worked out for them. And, you know, it's worrisome after what happened this whole season, of course, obviously with the vaccine. You know, they wanted him to get it, of course. He didn't get it. He didn't play. You know, they sent him home. You know, Joe Tsai, the owner of the Nets, he talked before that. You know, he made a point of saying he was actually vaccinated in Asia. I don't remember where exactly before, you know, he got the vaccine there. Then he got vaccinated here. I think it was four shots he got. To him, it was extremely important. Obviously, Kyrie, you know, didn't do that. They didn't quite see it the same way. And I believe they sent him home because they wanted to. Then they caved on that. And things really unraveled from there. I think that kind of showed that, you know, the players are running the team, not the other way around. James Harden got fed up with that, obviously. You know, I know he's not the same player, but I think that was a huge loss for this team.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's still great, even though he's not the same guy he was. And then they just really couldn't get anything together. And then at the end of the season, Kyrie lamented, you know, I think it was after they lost the series. He talked about not having enough reps from October. You know, in some ways, it's almost like, what is it? What's that show? Was it Tim Robbins on Netflix? It's the hot dog meme, right? We're all trying to find the guy who did this. Like he's lamenting that the group didn't have time together. And it's kind of like, well, why didn't they have time together, Kyrie? Right. You know?
Yeah. And that's the thing I don't get with him. I mean, there's a million things not to get, but I guess that one probably tops the list is discontent with how people talk about him or how people describe his situation or just his moves, motives, and all the rest. But he doesn't really talk. He doesn't shout there. He doesn't really explain himself all that much other than vague statements and little one-liners, like his explanation for opting in here, taking the brave path or whatever it was. Like, just, I hate to call it nonsense, but it doesn't really mean anything. Like, no one understood why he did what he did this week in terms of looking at the team and saying, I'm going to potentially leave this situation here. After the season, that there was no way he was going to leave Durant there, and then opting in just on a dime, you know. And again, like, no real explanation there to decipher. Again, you do what you want to do, Kyrie. It's just his discontent with people not understanding what he's doing while also not himself just doesn't add up to me a lot of the time. And this goes back to his Boston tenure. We don't really have to rehash everything that's happened here over the years with Kyrie. But I think one thing I kicked around with a number of Nets writers and Nets reporters and stuff through this whole process here is whether or not the Nets would want him back. And you mentioned Joe Tsai. It felt like he, more than anyone else here, said, what are we doing? You know, we're going to give a max contract to this guy. He hasn't played more than, you know, just over 100 games in three seasons for various different reasons. You know, wanted to cancel the bubble, wanted to take his hiatus year two, wanted to do this vaccine stance year three. And so much has been about Kyrie, and so little has been about Kyrie the player and the plan this team seemed to have in place here. I almost looked at it and said, are they better off without all the drama? Quietly diminishing returns in the playoffs, really the last few playoffs here from him. I know the 2021 run was injury, but this one, his last three games, 37% from the field. You know, more flair than production, more numbers and flash than winning, it seems, ways with him, and definitely more drama than benefit from having him around. So you look at it and say, is it worth it? But then you hear Durant's out if Kyrie's out. And it's like, ah, crap. Like, what are you going to do if you're the Nets? You lost all your picks. You went all poor. There's really no alternative to pivot to. And I know this was Kyrie making this decision, but you almost had to wonder if the Nets would have reached a point, too, where it's like, all right, do we have to cave? We're going to lose Durant.
Yeah, you know, it's really a tough situation because the team is worse if Kyrie's not on the team, even if Durant's on the team. And then with Durant's situation, it seems like Durant's not on the team if Kyrie's not. So they're much worse without Kyrie. So it's sort of like he needs them because nobody else wants to give him a max deal. And then they need him because they're much worse without him. So in some ways, I try to look at the opt-in as a positive in that it probably would have been a bad situation for the Nets if Kyrie had 3, 4, 5 guaranteed years. He's here in a one-year deal, essentially. You know, it's the equivalent of
a prove-it year, almost.
Yeah, a prove-it year for him. And he has to know that. I mean, I don't think Kyrie's a bad person. I don't think he's a bad person. I don't think he means poorly. You know, he's not unintelligent. You know, I think he has to know, okay, this is a very important year for me if I want to get a big contract at the end of the year. And in some ways, it's like for the Nets, it's almost win-win in some sense in that if he has that great year and they do great things, they might very well be happy to pay him because things worked out. And if he doesn't have that kind of year, they might be happy to move on, and they can because he's a free agent at the end of the year and they're not tied to each other. So they have to try to look at it as, okay, we have one year with this group and just try to win with this group. And the talent is there. It's ironic because you're coming from the Boston side. And I know there were a lot of changes made in Boston last summer, but that's a team that was a 7 seed the year before, got beat pretty easily in the first round, actually, by Brooklyn, of course. And then they're in the finals the next year.
Yeah,
a little bit off-season chaos. The Danny Ainge, like almost like the David Gettleman retirement with the Giants. You know, I never really bought the word retirement with him. You know, people were wondering, even Ime Udoka.
I mean, he's working again.
Right.
In Utah.
Exactly. Yeah. I think people forget with Udoka that he wasn't, like, mid-season, people weren't all that enthused with him as a coach. And now, obviously, he had a fantastic year. And they were able to turn things around by making some personnel changes Granted, the Nets are different because they're not making a front office change. They're not making a coaching change. But you hope with the mix of the prove-it year, you hope these guys are healthy. Ben Simmons also is in a prove-it situation. I don't think he could do that for another season. It's one thing to do it for one season. You know, he wanted to get out of Philly, and guys do things to get where they want, and people understand that. And there were other issues there too, but, you know, he's not going to want to do that a whole second season, right? So
seems like he was really hurt too. Yeah, I mean, he came in and it was like, oh, how's his back hurt? But he had the surgery, so I don't know. I really don't know what to say. It's like every person down the line here, you don't know what to say. Durant, was that playoff performance there the sign of what's to come, or was it just an anomaly? It's tough to say just because of the circumstances. Kyrie, no clue. Ben, what do you say? Like, you just don't know what's going on with any one of those guys. And then you get to the coach, which I think is sort of an underrated storyline here, just how he's back after kind of a, like, flaccid year, like, just leadership-wise. There wasn't really much added to the table. I still look back at that 20-game run where they lost 17 games, where they didn't really prop talent on the team, didn't get much coaching, it seemed like, at all in terms of persevering through that stretch. And I know you lose your three best players there, Kyrie and home games, and it's tough to sustain. But it felt like they had a little bit more of an ability to push through that path. And then once the chaos hit, it felt like Nash had no answers there. Now, it's always who you go get. And, you know, you need approval from the stars, it felt like, and stuff like that in this situation. Seemed like Sean Marks, like, Nash too, which is sort of part of this. I was stunned Nash came back, and I don't really know what you can expect out of him this year, if that's even important at all.
Yeah, what worries me with Nash is actually the Harden situation, because I always felt the best asset with Nash was he's got the gravitas to rein in the egos of the stars, and really the
job, right? If it wasn't his right, coaching jobs.
So I sort of, to be honest, I defended him most of the season because I felt like he had one job and that was a very important job. And then he didn't execute the one job he had. So you're right. It's kind of like you had one job, you know, and he just didn't do much of anything. They didn't really do much in the way of a creative offense. The defense slipped. Ironically, Ime Udoka was a huge part of the defense in 2021. The defense is actually a lot better than people expected.
D'Antoni, yeah, on offense, yeah. A couple key pieces. You know, Amari Stoudemire's leaving now. I think a couple coaches are dropping off that staff next year too. So
the one weird thing is Harrington's out. Yeah. Adam Harrington is out. And he was Durant, very close with Durant. And now Durant's frustrated. It makes you wonder. But it's interesting because my perception certainly, and I think a decent amount of people, has been that Durant has an incredible amount of pull with the team. And then they fire a coach who's so close to them or get rid of him. That raised my eyebrow. It's hard to get a foothold on this team. It's like things can totally implode, and we saw that last year. But we also did see, I know Harden was there, when they were healthy in 2020, 2021, they were extremely potent. And Ben Simmons is a perfect fit. They have a deep roster. It's just you sit there, it's like a tease. You know, it's like it can be great, but there's just so many issues that have gotten in the way.
I wonder what's going to happen with Durant, because – You hear the possibility he could have pushed to leave if Kyrie's out. And you're in this one-year experiment with Kyrie almost here. See how it goes with Ben. I wonder how quickly it could turn for Durant here. Like, at what point does he look at and say, all right, is Kyrie reliable as my co-star here? Does Ben give us anything? If this starts bad, I almost wonder how quickly Durant could turn on this whole situation here. Now, he seems to like living in New York. He seems to like having this low-key team. Again, I feel like I've said it over a dozen times over the last 3 years. If what was happening on this team was happening on the Knicks, I can't even imagine what the response would be. It'd be like the Lakers last year with Westbrook. There'd be emergency spaces every day on Twitter. Like, CNN would be outside MSG. The international media would be arriving saying, what the hell is going on? They've been almost fortunate to get this little scrutiny and scrutiny based off just how dysfunctional this has all been. But Durant, at what point does he look at this situation and say, what am I doing? Like, I don't have too many years left here in my prime. You know, I'm a couple years removed from the Achilles injury. You know, I was injured last year. At what point could he kind of start looking at his next destination here if this gets off to a rough start next year?
No, I worry about that too. I mean, if you just look at the landscape of the league, really ever since LeBron made the Miami move, stars move around all the time, all over the league. It's just so common. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't say that in a bad way. It's part of the league. Guys have a right to explore free agency, create their destiny. It's your legacy at the end of the day. So I don't begrudge guys from doing that, but it's part of the landscape, right? Guys move around a lot. They decide they're not winning enough. The environment's not what they want. They look for something else. We've seen Durant do it twice, right?
Yep.
He left Oklahoma City. He left Golden State.
And in free agency,
they have to worry about that. In free agency, that's true. He did not demand deals.
Especially, I mean, no one has done what that would be for Durant, right? Starting a new extension now, 4 years, not even starting it yet. If he was pushing for a trade this offseason, if Kyrie left, he would effectively be trying to get out of a deal before it even began, which would have been unprecedented. And these are the sort of things we're going to kick around as the new CBA starts here. Like, do the stars of this league have an effective opt-out whenever they want? Like, can they just say on a dime, day one of a deal, last year of a deal, second to last year of a deal, anytime they want, can they just say, I'm done, let's move on. If you don't move me, I'm going to sit home like Simmons. I can't see Durant doing that, but he does sort of have a pull with this organization that if he said, I'm done here, they'd almost have to, you know, start getting on the phone and making it happen.
Oh, absolutely. We saw Paul George with 3 years left in OKC demand a trade and get it. We saw Anthony Davis had, I think, 2 or 3 years left in his deal in New Orleans, demands a trade and gets it. Yeah, it used to be the leverage year was the last year of the deal. Now it's becoming, it's basically the entire deal. It's like you said, it's an effective opt-out every season. I think all 30 teams, like every star in the league, it's like every year you're basically having to sell guys to stick around. They could make that move anytime they want to pull that trigger, and it's an annual thing. And with Durant, you know, he absolutely could go that way. Now, hopefully he doesn't. And one thing with Durant is he probably knew in 2016 he was leaving Oklahoma City. He certainly knew in 2019 he was leaving Golden State. And both years, regular season and playoffs, he played great. Granted, in 2019 he suffered the injuries, of course, in the playoffs with the calf.
That was a killer too for Brooklyn, but losing him year one. Like, that was effectively just like a giveaway year on both of their deals.
Yeah. And granted, they knew that. They did sign up for that, but they certainly didn't expect year two to have, you know, injuries essentially at the end with Harden's hamstring and Kyrie with the ankle. And then last year was year three. I don't think anybody expected that.
No, especially ending in a sweep. I mean, the only team getting swept in the playoffs, so unreal to think about, especially with them being in some Vegas circles and other people's perceptions, the favorites in the East, despite everything that went on there, and it just crumbled. Now, Seth Curry clearly hurt in round one. He comes back, still one of the best deals in the sport, I think, a really good supporting piece for this team. Joe Harris back off surgery, not really a part of last year's team at all. You still have those young pieces, whether it's De'Ron Sharp or Cam Thomas. There's a lot to like here. Simmons, as you said to open the show, the fit makes sense if he's himself or who he was before. And then you look at some of the free agents here, Bruce Brown, Nick Claxton, as well as Patty Mills. We'll see who comes back out of that group, along with the veterans, because Aldridge and Griffin, who really didn't factor in that much last year anywhere, free agents as well. So there's a lot to still shake out with this roster. Curry Harris feels a little redundant. I guess we'll just kind of go step by step here. Do you see either one of them being moved, or do you think they're both going to be part of this roster next year?
I could see them moving even both, but certainly one. You know, Harris fits amazingly well with this team.
Oh, he was incredible in 21. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people forget about him because he had a bad playoff series against the Bucks, and then he was hurt so much last year. But he's good. He's actually a low-maintenance guy, which this team could use. You know, he fits so perfectly in so many ways, but he's got, you know, like the $19 million salary, and if they want to match deals and make something happen in a trade without, of course, touching the top three,
he's what sort would of be their need? Might have to touch. Like, what would they be looking for if they were going to move one of those guys?
Honestly, I think it's bigger wings. I think you need two-way wings. Granted, they're not getting anybody as good as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But when you look at that kind of archetype of player in terms of two-way guys, they can shoot, they can defend, switch. Those are the kinds of guys they need. They were really small last year. I mean, they were, right? Mills, really small. Seth Curry, really small. Even Kyrie, for that matter, is not that big. Obviously, Durant's a big guy, but they were just small all around last year. I think they need more of those bigger wings, like a PJ Washington type from Charlotte. That's the kind of piece I think they're going to be targeting.
Yeah. You try to think of them off the top of your head, and there's not a ton of them. I mean, the Blazers went out and got one in Jeremy Grant, paid a decent price for it. Probably going to take, you know, you don't have draft picks, so it probably would take maybe both of those guys value-wise to get a player like that. And both are fairly expensive. I guess Curry, you look at it as a good contract there. Harris, potentially a little high. But yeah, you might have to move both those guys to get a wing like that. And I can't think of one off the top of my head necessarily. Maybe like a Malik Beasley. Someone in that mold. Yeah. TJ Warren's out there as a free agent. A sign and trade doesn't work there, but you know, maybe if you offload some of that salary, you could do a mid-level. But they definitely need that for sure, because the defense was a disaster last year. That's probably the biggest question. You need Bruce Brown back in that capacity, probably. But he's going to be looking for a payday here. And this team seems to have no limit when it comes to the tax. But each one of these guys, it's almost like the Warriors. If you bring back Looney, Porter, and Payton, it's going to cost $100 million. I'm sure it's going to probably cost something similar to keep Claxton, Brown, and Patty Mills will be a minimum. So the hit there isn't as big. But which one of those guys or all of them do you think could potentially be back with this team?
Yeah, Mills, I have a feeling now he won't be back now that he's opted out. He had the mid-level to opt into. It was essentially a year or two of his mid-level. I tend to think he'll leave if he didn't opt into that. Because I feel like if you opt out, you're thinking you'll get – doesn't seem like you'd get more than that. So I'm thinking that's him saying, you know, I'm gone. You know, he's a solid player, but I think he's redundant with Seth Curry, which, of course, is something they didn't contemplate because they didn't think they'd have Seth Curry because they didn't think they were trading James Harden last year. So I think he'll be gone. Claxton, I think they're going to bring back. I think that, you know, he's a nice big. He's mobile. He's not, you know, talent-wise they could use better, but he's the kind of player they need. I like his physicality for the roster. I mean, he's thin, but he gives effort. They could use that.
He was really good in that Celtics series, too. But besides the, I think, historic amount of free throws missed in game four.
Yeah. That had to be nerves, I think, because he's not a good free throw shooter by any means, but he's not that poor.
I think he missed 10, if I remember off the top of my head. It was unreal. It was like the cherry on top of just that disastrous series for them. And he played a good game. It was like all him getting offensive rebounds and going to the line, but he was missing everything there. But a solid player. Needs to catch the ball a little better in the pick and roll and, you know, kind of figure out where he's at on offense. But defensively and on the boards, he definitely helps a lot.
Definitely.
And then Brown's the big one. I mean, Brown was probably the best player start to finish in that series for Brooklyn. I love the way he played the role for them. Would love him coming to Boston, and that's sort of why I ask about him and the potential of him staying with this team. Obviously a Boston native, but you know, he's an important part that I would imagine they'd probably extend themselves a little bit for.
I could see him back. I'm sort of in the middle there. I tend to think he'll be back, but I'm not too sure. He was good in the playoffs last year too. People forget that.
Yeah.
It's two seasons in a row that he was really good in the playoffs for them.
Almost like a center offensively for them, where Claxton and, you know, some of the other pieces weren't
great. And he even answered some questions. And he answered some questions because some people were wondering if he was just, you know, a creature of Harden in the pick and roll. And then he actually played very well this year after the trade.
Yeah. Got the 3-point shot down. Defensively strong, even though he's not the, you know, tallest wing. I love his game. I love his game all around. And still fairly young, too, so you think he could potentially grow here. A real edge to him. Don't think it was the smartest move in the world to kind of lighten a fire under Horford and Tice to start the series, but whatever. Oh, man, Brooklyn. I'm excited to watch them, but it feels like the drama off the court's always going to overpower whatever's going on the court with this group. But we'll see. There's a solid cast of talent here. Definitely a group that at its height could contend for the East here, but we'll see what kind of moves they make this offseason, who ultimately shows up in training camp in the fall, and Justin will be tweeting through it at Brooklyn's Beat. Go follow him there at Brooklyn's Beat. And all his coverage he's bringing to the team there. Appreciate having you on, Justin. Always good to talk Nets with you. And we'll see where this team is at come training camp in the fall.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you. Take care.
All right. And, of course, everybody, just giving you a look into tomorrow, free agency day getting going. We'll have a Garden Report. I believe we'll have some sort of Dome Theory here in the morning as well. Do another one just to talk about the draft that was a week ago as well as free agency. We, of course, brought to you by Calm. I'm going to try to pull it up here, calm.com/garden. Go check that out. Get a subscription, 40% off a premium subscription right now at calm.com for Garden Report, as well as Dome Theory listeners. We'll give them some free love right here over on Dome Theory as well. Calm.com/garden, 40% off a premium subscription. Go check that out. Go subscribe to the pod on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you get it. And appreciate you all listening live on the YouTube side. And we'll be back with a bunch of stuff tomorrow. Free agency underway, 6 o'clock tomorrow. See what the Celtics do, the Nets do. Number of different teams getting rolling here in an interesting 24 or 48 hours ahead. Thanks, everybody.